In a world that is continuously affected by macroeconomic issues, technological development, and the ever-changing financial landscape, you and I are required to make difficult decisions on how to effectively save, invest, and spend. On this podcast, we simplify the art of saving and investing so that you are in better control of your money. I am your host, Leaho Babo, a finance aficionado and a lover of all things investment. Welcome to Finance Matters with Leaho.
Hello family, welcome to another episode of Finance Matters with Leaho. Today I'm joined by a very special guest who's doing phenomenally well in the motoring space, and we talk about shopping for your car after landing your first job. Think about it. Shopping for your first car is one of the greatest milestones ever. You are overcome by excitement because you will finally be behind your own wheel and travel in your own comfort. While it is such a big deal, it can be incredibly daunting because there's just so much to consider. Should your car be brand new or secondhand? What method of financing will assist you in purchasing the vehicle, and how much will you part with to cover your insurance premiums? Those are just some of the few factors you will have to consider before making that decision. To unpack this today, I am joined by Rebanuele Semakane, an amazing petrol head who's doing phenomenal work in the male-dominated industry. Reba, welcome to my podcast, and thank you for coming onto the show. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. Jumping right in, right? So just to kickstart the podcast, please tell us more about yourself and how you ended up in the motoring space.
Well, I started liking cars basically from high school. I think I was in grade 10. And I just stumbled upon, I think it was Channel 120, BBC. It's not Lifestyle, the other one. And then I saw Top Gear and I was like, what the hell? There's a whole realm of cars out here that I didn't know actually existed. And I was so excited to find out that South Africa does have a market for motoring reviews and motoring journalism, because many African countries don't due to economic issues and stuff like that. So we are very fortunate to be getting cars, and we have like first on many lists for imports and exports and stuff like that. And we have a huge export market, and learning about those things just made me really happy. And just after I got my driver's license, I begged my dad for one. I was like, I need one. He's like, no, finish school. I need that thing now.
Yeah.
And when I got it, I just started sending emails to all these manufacturers, and then Ford gave me a chance. And it's been uphill from there.
Wonderful. That's quite lovely, right? And I understand that one of the most stressful and rewarding events is shopping for your first car. And I've come to observe that people either get entirely right or wrong, and there's no in between. To get the right car requires good planning, time, and determination. From the time that you have spent in the motoring industry and having the experience, having testing so many cars, what useful tips would you share to assist someone who's actively looking into buying their first car?
I think take your time. That's the first most important thing. You can take a year or 2 years just to buy your first car. It's a big purchase. It's a huge commitment. Take your time. That's the first step. Secondly, shortlist all the cars that you want. If it's 20 cars, shortlist them. Test drive all 20 if you want. Just go in depth with what you want, with the cars that you've shortlisted that are within your budget. Test them all, narrow it down to about 5 or 3, and then make your decision from there. It's good to consult friends, it's good to consult family, but remember, these people don't really know your budget, they don't know your finances too well. Yes, they will guide you accordingly, but not a lot of us can divulge such financial information to just anyone. You know, it's not easy to say to someone that my budget is about 3,000 rand for a car, you know. Yes, do listen to your peers, listen to your friends, ask them for advice. But at the end of the day, just remember that you are the one paying for the car. No one else is going to assist you. So this is solely on you. Look at all avenues. But really, for first time buyers, I would say stick to brand new, just for ease of mind and hassle free. As you grow and as you keep maintaining your car, then you can look into other markets like the secondhand market, the demo market, and stuff like that. But actually, to just correct myself, the demo market is actually very great for first-time buyers, because demo cars are usually what the cars that I test. So sure. they get defleeted after a certain amount of kilometers. So it's about 12 to 16,000. It's still very fresh.
Yeah.
You can go to the look there. They're still basically brand new. These are cars that have been used at events, our media events and launches and test cars. So when they reach a certain mileage, they're defleated and sold. So you can get that.
Obviously. Rental cars also become demos, right? They then, because I understand getting my car as well, I understand it was also rental.
Yeah.
And then when it reached 14,000 Ks, they just put it up for sale.
Yes, so they do that. So that is also a very good avenue, especially for first-time buyers.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the second-hand market and auctions, it's touch and go. So I think for safety, if you're starting out, keep it with the demos and the brand new cars.
Mm-hmm, wonderful. I mean, also, just from a finance point of view, I think what some of the useful hacks that can help people really save a couple of thousands that I would like to share is that keeping a strict budget, right?
Yes, definitely.
Because I feel like this really assists you because you restrict the cost range at which you're willing to spend, thereby reducing the options of the car you can compare.
Yes, definitely. You must... Actually, you know what? It depends. All it depends on your budget, obviously, but try and keep it as low as possible.
Sure.
A car is a big purchase, and the more affordable the car, the easier it is to maintain. But there's a lot of factors when it comes to maintenance also. There are many brands out there with, you need to just check off the dealer network and see how people have responded to after service sales, customer sales and stuff like that. So there's a whole other spectrum when buying your first car. But when it comes to a budget, keep it as low as possible. Keep it as... I don't know, try not to go overboard. Yes, it's your first car. Maybe you want to buy something fancy and expensive. But I think, you know, if you're starting out, you need to get into the groove of maintaining a car. So keep it as low as possible.
Yeah. And what about also just having a clear understanding of what your vehicle needs are? I mean, the truth is specs and all these additional features are nice and enticing, but they are not a need. I don't think you need a sunroof or a digital dashboard.
yes.
Or heated seats.
Yeah. No, when you're starting out, obviously you don't really need those things.
They really end up pushing the price higher.
Yeah, they push the price up, and now you have to maintain all these other things. When digital clusters come in, you have onboard computers, your indicator lights are connected to a computer, something goes wrong, now you have to replace a number of things, you know. So keep it as simple as possible. Get into the groove of maintaining a car. After 4 or 5 years of having that first car of yours, you can move on to something bigger, a bit more fancier, because you've gotten into the groove of maintaining a car. You've gotten into the groove of pouring petrol, you know, changing tires, changing brake pads and clutches and all those things.
Yeah, I think by really clearly defining what you want from your first car, you're really able to stay within your budget and get value for money in the process.
Yes, definitely. Especially if you're young, like my age.
Yeah.
I think most people who are 24 are not looking to have kids anytime soon. So small cars, this is where they come in and this is where they shine, you know. Cars like Kia Picanto, Polo Vivo, i10, i20. And what's nice about hatchbacks is that if you do probably have a partner or have kids, they still can double up and have ISOFIX core ports that you can put the car seat in. So there are cars that will work for either lifestyle and either age. But if you're just starting out in corporate and you want something from A to B, I do highly recommend these small cars, your Picantos, your i10s, your Suzuki Ignis, Suzuki Swift. They are really affordable, less than 300K. And I think that you can literally make it work.
But let's also be honest, you also want aesthetically pleasing cars.
Definitely. I mean, if you are someone who's starting out and earning racks, you know, taking a lot of money home, go for that 1 Series, go for that A Class. Personally, 1 Series is the best entry into premium. That's one of my best bets. Go buy that thing, go buy that Mazda, go buy that CX-5.
Better than the A Class. I'm such a sucker for Benz.
Significantly better. I'm not. Okay, so I saw an A200 AMG going for about 726,000 rand. And personally, I was like, that is a lot.
That's quite steep.
That is a lot for just the kit.
Yeah.
You know, you can literally get a BMW for probably 100-200K less. A decent 118i, decent power output, very nice. It's actually very spacious. So when it comes to Merc, I'm a bit of touch and go, especially the pricing. But the products are great. No lie. No doubt about that.
And I think it's also very important to compare quotations from different dealerships. This not only gives you it doesn't only provide you with the confidence when you make the final decision about where to buy from, but it also gives you leverage. I understand that you can also source different quotations and then use them as your springboard to get a good price.
Yeah, you must always always compare. Always compare. Don't go with the first deal you see. Always compare. Try and search for the greatest deal ever. I do know that there are sites like AutoTrader and Cars.co.za where you can literally search for, like, the search engine is so amazing. You can literally just put in anything, put in your budget, put in a mileage, and it will all come up for you. So, yeah, do make sure that you are within budget and make sure that you compare.
Because dealerships compete all the time, right? They want honestly, you. They want you to buy from them.
Yeah. So if you can go and say, look, Kia Rivonia said this and Kia Santon says this. Or you could go to them and say, VW Bryanston gave me this quote and you guys, VW Rivonia, are giving me a certain quote. They'll be like, oh, okay. Then they always want to crack a deal, these people. Always. But don't be fooled. Don't fall into the trap of the extras. That's what gets. They'll tell you, Joe, it's not nice without this. Just add that. And you're excited at the time, right?
I still regret that I didn't get a car with the sunroof.
You see? But you're excited. To this day. You're excited at the time. And then you put in all these 20-inch wheels. You don't know. You're just like, okay, my car's nice. Has nice wheels, sunroof. And then when service comes or something happens, you're like, damn. So I gotta pay like 40K for tires, you know? So they get you guys, they get a lot of people with that. And especially first-time buyers, they always make sure that you get aesthetic advancements on your cars, because the more money they make, the happier they are.
And I think also just having an idea of how you're going to finance that car is important. You have to decide on whether you'll be putting an upfront deposit and have the balance financed by the bank, or if you're going to be paying in installments over a period of time altogether.
Yeah, I do vouch for deposits here and there, but with really lower end cars, like less than about 300K, I think just take it as an installment Just get it fully from the bank. I'm not too well versed with vehicle financing because I'm not in that industry really. So when people do ask me, I always say speak to someone who understands that bit better than I do. And part of me doesn't really want to be fully versed, because then it feels like I'll be kind of trashing financial advisors' jobs, you know, because I could get it wrong. But what I always believe is that if it's a less than 300K, I think you don't really need to put down a deposit. Just take it on installment. And if you're someone who's going to change the car soon, you're not planning to have it for long, then why put down a deposit, you know? Yeah. There's various financing avenues. There's a graduate program from West Bank. I just recently heard about it. And I know some manufacturers also do the graduate program thing, that if you've done a certain degree, your premiums are a bit less and stuff like that. I haven't heard any responses as to how it works, but it seems like a lot of young people have gone that route. And I think it's good.
Also, just asking for all the information pertaining to the vehicle. If it's secondhand, if it's a demo, service books, maintenance reports, and car accident history. Sometimes you find that dealerships do not even disclose all that information.
You must take that car, get a DECRA report. Guys, if you need to spend that extra money just to make sure that your car that you're buying is 100%, please do so. There are people who refurbish written off cars and sell them to you.
Yeah.
And when something happens to you, they'll say that this car has been written off. And
it's actually a real thing, dude. Like, you get a lot of consumers who buy all these cars, then a couple of months down the line, it's messed up. Like, they can't even drive it because...
Yeah, especially with these higher-end cars, you know, that's why I always advise people who are starting out, especially in my age group, that don't really go for higher-end cars when you're starting out, because especially if you're not buying them brand new. Because a lot of us, our peers, are always like, oh, this is so expensive, I'd rather get a secondhand, what. And secondhand performance sometimes is a hit or a miss. But you know, remember, these people do not drive these cars the way you will drive a Kia Picanto or a Kia Rio or a Hyundai i10. These people with GTIs are going ham, guys. They are pedal flat every single day. So something could fuse, a turbo could be, like, it could go so... people are launching these cars. After you launch it a certain time, your clutch is messed up. So you must be very aware. But I don't have anything against buying a performance car as your first car, but please be careful.
A lot can be broken there.
A lot can be broken. And if the price is too good to be true, then it is too good to be true. Don't ever do it.
And while we're on price, like, what are some of the ways that you think people can use to negotiate a good price when they are getting their first car?
Like I said earlier, just get your quotations together and go to the dealers and just gauge which one could give you the best deal. Also, when it comes to pricing, check on that quote, check what you're getting in that car. Check your specs, check the mileage, check the tires, check all the things. And compare to the other cars, probably you're not looking at one car, you're looking at different cars. Compare what I'm getting and what you get spec-wise, what you get the most from. It's the best.
Lovely. Thank you very much for sharing that. And do you, actually, I think this is a very good question. Do you think that brand new cars are overrated? What, like, just walk us through your thought process about buying your car brand new, actually.
I think currently now with the pricing of many cars, I can understand. I really can, because the current car I'm testing is a Mazda 2, and that's already almost 400,000 Rand, which I think is absolutely ridiculous for something that's competing with a Polo, which is super small, but like, not much of a great drive, but the interior is phenomenal. It's out there. It's probably the best in its class. If I had 400,000 Rand lying around, I don't know, but the Mazda 2 would not be part of my... would not be an option. But buying brand new gives you a lot of peace of mind, because this car is just fresh from the port, came to the dealer, it's yours. You're the first person to drive it. You are the one who's going to determine the consumption. It's yours. It's like, it's literally new to you. Unlike something that's secondhand, someone has driven it, probably that person drove it harder than you do. And maybe, like we said earlier, this could be some problems, that underlying problems that we don't know of. But it really is all up to the consumer, hey? I can't really say which one is best, which one isn't. If you really have the money and you're willing to do the extra research to buy secondhand, do it. But if you feel like you don't care about the price and you want to buy something brand new for the sake of it being brand new and for the peace of mind that it comes with, then sure.
And if I'm fresh out of university, I just landed my first job, and I am in urgent need of a car because of travel constraints, how can I ensure that I do not go through the painstaking process? What should I look out for to walk away with a really great car?
You know what? That's why it's a bit tricky when you finished varsity and you just started working. Now you have a very little time to look for a car, because like I said earlier, give it a year, give it 2 years. Now, if you're someone who needs to travel a lot and needs to drive due to work, you're under a bit of duress, because when you start your job, you're just going to be like, I need a car right now. And that is actually a bit of an issue, because you'll be flustered. You are thinking a lot. You're already starting a new job. You're stressed in your job. Now you have to buy a car. You could literally buy anything, and that thing could be very detrimental to you. So my best advice for someone who's really fresh out of varsity, the moment before you start your job, and if you know that it's a job that's strenuous, that needs you to be traveling around, start looking. Don't start looking once you've already walked through the office doors.
Yeah.
Start looking way before, when you know that I've graduated, this is the job, I start my contract this day, and I know that I need to do this and this and that. Start early. And when you start early, it's going to be better, so that when you, the first day, you already know that I have a few documents going to one dealer and stuff like that. So start very early.
And I think it's also very important for people to note that it does not end with buying the car. Like, there are more costs involved post fetching the car from the dealership. What should we include in our car budgets, do you think?
You must include tires. Okay, obviously petrol. Check the liters of the car. Petrol in Amelete. So things are really bad, guys. Yeah. I mean, I put 500 in a Polo Vivo one time and it didn't do much. And I was like, damn. So you need, there's so many factors. There's tires. You need to check wipers, windscreen. People get tire insurance also. That's also a very good thing to get.
Oh, okay.
Tire insurance. Your windscreen. Windscreens can chip, literally anything, a stone chip, whatever. And you must never drive with a chipped windscreen, because anything can go wrong. It could cave in and stuff like that. So fuel cost, obviously. The running cost usually for cars is just tires mainly. Maintenance is usually done by service, so service that's covered. But for people who don't have tire insurance, you must look out for your tires. Fuel costs also, please look at that. And yeah, I think that's basically it.
And do prices change during the month, or are they set in stone? I mean, I've once been told that salespersons will literally do anything to push to close a deal, right? And they tend to be more understanding or willing to negotiate at the end of the month. Is that an actual thing? How does that work?
I've never heard of anything like that. That's new to me. Is it, like, does it happen?
I'm asking you, how fixed prices are.
No,
like,
prices how, are usually, yeah,
how much they're willing to go to close the sale?
Yeah, they all go to any extent, but I mean, you can't slash the price by a good 100K just to make a deal.
Yeah.
But I've never heard of that, but I know that they will literally do anything and everything to make sure that you take the car from them, you know? But I don't think they would alter the price that much.
That much.
But you can probably negotiate for cost price. So if they say 179,000 Rand and the cost price is 130, you can negotiate for that because it's cost price. Yeah, so if you really, really are adamant and you're like, I don't want to pay 200K, can I pay 150? You can negotiate for cost price.
Ah, wonderful. And how do car trade-ins work? And how can one extract value from trading in an old car for a new one?
Trade-ins, so they measure the value of your car.
Okay,
so say, for example, you have a Polo, a VW Polo, the new one, and when you try and trade it in, they obviously do the valuation on it and stuff like that, and then they say, well, your car's worth 150,000 Rand right now, and maybe the car you're looking at now is, say, 300,000 Rand. Okay, so you have the 150,000 Rand, you take it in, all you need to do is just pay off the balance of 150 because you've traded in your car. There are these things that happen, like trade-in assistance. So you get 15,000 Rand off, 10,000 Rand off. A lot of manufacturers do it. And I've seen it. It's very prominent with Kia and Hyundai. So I think it's good deals, especially if you've been in the family. So it's a great way to also escalate in the brand. So if you started with an i20, now you can know that you can move on to a Tucson. You can move on to a Santa Fe. When you trade in the i20, you move on to bigger. So that's I really do believe in trading in, especially if you are, some people are done paying the car, and you're just like, let me just get something else after that 5 years has lapsed or something.
I would really like us to unpack leasing versus buying a new car, right? So in the ever-changing environment that we live in, ownership of assets is not as glamorous as people make it to be. In certain cases, renting works out much better. When you're not buying a new car cash, you will need to have it financed and ultimately end up paying more because of an extended payment period and interest charges thereof. The upside is you get to keep the car once you've paid it off, or you get to trade it in for a better vehicle, or even sell it. Leasing, on the other hand, presents you the perks of having the latest model features every time you want an upgrade, but you always end up paying monthly fees, which are at a higher rate than the normal installment, I understand.
Yes, definitely.
So you can lease for about, let's say, for example, 3 to 4 years and then return it or exchange the car. My issue, though, is that you will have nothing to show for what you have been paying over that period.
Yes, and sometimes the mileage is capped. So over that 3 years, you can only do 80,000 kilometers, you know, or probably 50 even, because they calculate that the average person does 20,000 a year.
Okay.
So in 3 years, when you're leasing, they'd say after 50,000 kilometers, bring it back and then you change it. But like you said, leasing is perfect for premium cars, people who always want to be in the latest car and don't want to have full ownership of it. So this is where your premium brands shine. And this is what they all advertise on their websites. Mercedes-Benz does this, BMW does this. It's a thing, especially amongst the more premium brands. But with the other not so premium brands, they really do stick to the conventional vehicle financing, monthly installments and stuff like that. But if I have to give an opinion, it works.
Yeah. What's your take on it? Under what circumstances would you actually recommend it against buying a car?
I think leasing, like I said, is best if you know that you're going to change your car frequently. If you know that you're not going to be in the same car for the next 5 years, you want to change something quickly. And if you don't do a lot of driving, if you do a lot of driving, then you're going to have to be counting that mileage. And it's going to be so strenuous on you. So rather not do that. What's nice about the conventional way of getting a car, like vehicle financing, you have full control over the mileage. You can do whatever you want. It's yours. You're paying for it until the term ends and stuff like that. So on both spectrums, it really does depend on your preference and what you would like. But personally, for me, I don't think I'd go for leasing. I wouldn't.
Yeah, no, definitely not as well. But what are some of the common mistakes that you have observed from people who are buying their first cars?
They go big. they go too big, you know. People get wrapped up in this thing that I have just started working. I need to go home with something that's elebegang gore ke a bereka, you know. And now una ne hore batho ba tlo reng about you if you start buying a small car, which is not the case. And I'm speaking from someone who's young also. I mean, I finished my final exam, so I'm speaking from someone who's probably entering the job market soon. Those were one of the first mistakes. The second mistake is people running for secondhand performance all the time. People are running for the secondhand GTIs, the secondhand Rs, A45s, A35s, all those things. And they're not doing due diligence and work. Like, they're not doing the work. They just see the price and like, okay, the price is good, let me go for it. So that's another common mistake. I've also noticed, like I said earlier, the peer pressure. The peer pressure, I think, is one of the biggest things.
It's real.
It's so real. And but I like how our generation is that we don't care what you drive. It's an achievement. Whatever car you buy, be it big or small, you still get the same respect, you still get the same love. Committing to a car is a big thing. And if you're paying 1,500 rand for your car a month, you're not any different from the person who's paying 12,000 rand for the car. You guys are, this is a huge, 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 huge investment. So go for it. But I think the peer pressure is the one for me that's just like, don't do it.
So to wrap up today's podcast, I would like to particularly share 6 hacks that I've collected to assist you in getting a good deal, right? And I'll also ask Reba to share hers. But from my side, I would really say know your credit record, right? That's definitely the first one. Know your credit record. And if you can, I think I've been vouching for secondhand a lot ever since we started having this conversation. But if you can, go for a secondhand car.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, I'm not shunning secondhand.
Yeah.
I will never. I'm just saying, do your work.
Yeah.
Make sure you do the research.
Yeah.
Because with brand new, 90% of the time, you're guaranteed peace of mind. But with secondhand, you need to do the extra work. DECRA reports, all those things need to be done.
Correct. And I would also say, third, shop for a loan and secure a reduced interest rate, right? That's very important. And use the loan that you are offered to negotiate a good purchase price. Payment plans are misleading, I'd say. Focus on the price,
right? I totally agree.
And lastly, walk away if you must, because another dealership will always be available to give you the price
that you want.
I think that sums it up from my side. Please take us away.
My hacks or my tips is stay within your budget. Try to accommodate all the things that you want in your budget. Look at the car, check the specs, check the extras list. They're all readily available on the website, you know, so you can usually do that. Stick to your budget. Make sure that you know you're within budget, and yeah, make sure that you can afford the car. Ask around, ask financial advisors, ask your friends about maintenance, about aftermarket care and all those things. So just be aware of everything that comes with owning the car after you've bought it. So the service, where's the dealership nearest to home? Where am I going to buy the car? You know, things like that. If it's too good to be true, then it's too good to be true. Leave it, because there are people who are going to take you for a ride. I've seen that people are selling cars on Gumtree and Facebook. Also trade lightly there. Trade very lightly. Some of them have been stolen, guys. Like, there's no way you're going to get a Ford Ranger for 80,000 Rand. That's not going to happen. Instagram, same thing. If a person is sending you personal bank details for a car, it's a scam. Don't do it. People have been scammed so many times. And they put it under the guise that it's auction cars. Some are, but some aren't. Some are stolen and there's no paperwork. And yeah, so be very wary, guys. Be very wary. And especially if it's your first car, you could be sucked into any trap. So just make sure that you are, your head's above the water and you know what you're doing.
It's actually quite crazy now that you also mention scams, because I saw a tweet actually, Crime Watch, right? How these expensive cars, dude, I'm talking about your Legend 50s and the like, say those get stolen, and then these guys, the guys who actually steal these cars get paid, like, I saw a tweet, someone said that 8,000 rands.
And then 5,000 for a Merc. Look, I'm not too well-versed, but what I've heard is that because Rangers are used for the heists, because they are big and intimidating. So it's easy for them to just put the car in front of you. You'll be intimidated that here's this huge Ranger in front of me, stuff like that. But can pay off fees. I like, guys, I don't know how to put this in like professional terms.
Doesn't have to be professional.
Maragin toyo fees are like, if you go to Marabastad, you see that Gucci bag, yeah, 150. Yeah, fees are like, it's not the real one, you know? Same thing with these cars. These cars that need to be stripped, they need to be taken across the border. That's a quick job. And that 8,000 could be split between two or three guys. These guys are risking their lives and selling cars that you buy for sub-million rand for just 10,000 rand. These are stripped for parts and those parts are sold for cheap. They're not.
I was about to say, because I know with some of these vans, what they do, they take the engine, then they like use it for taxis as well.
Yeah, that was a thing back in the day with the VVTi, the Hilux.
Yeah.
So I used to interchange the Hilux one into Quantums. And then I think Toyota did something to make sure that each car has its own engine. I could be wrong, I'm not too sure, but I think it's very scary how people work so hard for their stuff and then they get stolen, sold for so little. Some are taken across borders, Mozambique, Zim. They are hard property, guys, and it's really just scary. I think it's the same with iPhones. You know, iPhones are about 20,000 rand. People who steal them sell them for 800, even less, guys. And imagine how hard you are working every month paying for these things. And yeah, I did an anti-hijacking course by Suzuki, but most of the time when he was explaining everything, I was a bit unsettled, because yeah. I mean, in that time, a lot of the things that I've been taught, if I'm in a situation where I'm being hijacked, I probably think I wouldn't do even one, you know, because it's a scary moment, guys. It's not something that you can premeditate and expect to happen. But there are some anti-hijacking tips that we've gotten. If I could share.
Oh, wait, here, please.
If you're driving home at night, circle the block.
What does that mean?
So if you come into your estate, don't come in immediately. Drive around a bit just to make sure no one's following you. Okay. Then you can drive in like later. Just drive around first, you know, especially if you're coming home at night. If you have kids, keep your kid behind you. Don't put your kid on the behind the passenger seat. Keep your kid behind you, so that if this person, when they get you out, you're like, can I negotiate to get my kid out? You can easily just open instead of reaching over, because any slight movement where they don't see what you're doing, they could attack you.
Yeah.
So keep your kids at the back, you know, all your valuables, all your belongings, keep them in the boot, especially ladies, keep them in the boot. Maybe mm-hmm. your phone, if you're planning to CarPlay, try and hide it, because smash and grab is also a thing. But yeah, I think the most important one is that, guys, make sure that people don't notice your movements, you know, and people do cram movements. Hijacking is not something that just happens abruptly. Unfortunately, you cannot evade the fact that probably someone's asking themselves, what if they throw me in the boot and take me away? That is likely to happen, because the reason why hijackers throw you in the boot and take you far and throw you wherever and take all your belongings is that they have time to strip the car before you can start calling for contingency, the police, your insurances, whatever, whatever. By the time you call them, or the time you get home, the job is done. That's why and it's a scary thing, you know, like, why are you throwing me in the boot? So that's why sometimes when I listen to anti-hijacking stuff, I'm like, I can't prevent this person throwing me in the boot, you know? So these things happen, but I think the most important, especially with us who are going to groove and going out at night.
December's here.
Yeah. If you're driving home with friends after a day out, circle the block a bit. But I think the safest thing to do is come back in the morning. That's what my mom told me. She was like, guys, this thing of you guys coming home late at night and calling us to open the gate, come back in the morning when the sun is out and we can see you just open. This thing of coming home late, it's not safe.
Definitely. No, I think that brings us to the end of today's podcast. Reba, thank you so much for coming on.
It was a pleasure.
It was lovely having this chat with you. And keep on doing what you're doing. Keep on thriving. And look, I don't know. What's next? What do you expect from me now going forward?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I'm done with school. So people are like, yeah, do
motoring. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. People are like, yeah, do motoring full time. I'm like, guys, I actually also want a 9-to-5 like other kids, you know. I want to go to the office and stuff. I'm like, no, it's not fulfilling. It's not nice at all. That's what I want. But I'll see, really. I really will see. But I've noticed that the love for radio and presenting is coming back. Had it in high school, and then being exposed to different like platforms, like your platform, other podcasts that I've done, other TV interviews. It's just like, I think that's where I'm headed. And it would be really good. It would be a huge blessing for me to grace your TV screens or your radio. airwaves. Yeah. Something like that.
No, thank you. Thank you very much for coming on. And thank you very much for listening. Please remember to subscribe and share the podcast. Leave us a review and share your thoughts. Tell us what you think and how you found this one and what tips you are taking away from this one in making a decision to get your first car. Take care. Till next time. Cheers.